Welcome to the What's Your Problem podcast with Amy Bull. I'm here with Mark Davies, Chief Commercial Officer of MK Dons, and today we're going to be finding out what his problem is. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're very welcome. So that sounds like a big job for Milton Keynes Dons. So football club, for anybody that doesn't know it. So why don't you give us a bit of a quick introduction to what that job is and who Milton Keynes Dons are?
Yeah, ultimately, you know, I've been brought in as part of the new ownership to help drive ultimately more revenue streams to the business. Obviously, you know, football teams, we're all working towards success on the field in some way, shape or form. So mine's very clear in terms of, obviously, you know, the more we bring in off the field, the better the performances lead kind of on it to some extent. But it goes a bit, MK Dons is a bit different. You know, it doesn't have the history of other clubs. It's still, it has an unbelievable facility. All of these bits really play in. So a lot of it is almost, I always call it like a 20-year-old startup. You know, but we're starting afresh. We've got all the infrastructure in place, the kind of the people to help it grow. But we're trying to build a football club properly when we haven't got that history as such, really. So of course, you know, the spreadsheets don't go away and the numbers matter, but there's a whole wider piece in terms of my role within the club and what we're trying to do at the football club compared to certainly some of the other clubs that I've been at before.
So you call yourselves a 20-year-old startup. Yeah. That's quite an interesting description, but what makes it feel like a startup? Is it because, like you say, the history of other clubs versus what you've got, or is there something else?
Yeah, I think startups it's more a mentality than a physical piece to some extent, really. So again, it's very modern to refer to yourself as a startup, and it lays into it. I think for us, and certainly me personally looking in, that the challenge here is, yes, you've got a club that is in like League Two as such, really. But my skill set is developing structures off the field to grow clubs and ultimately get promotion and win those trophies, really. So for me, it is, you know, parking the history of the club, coming in afresh and going, right, here's, you know, we want to be here. How do we get there? And to do that, you need a certain type of mentality. But what I would say is there's some really good people and processes already in place. So it's not pure startup. It would be a newly startup, but a lot of it is down to the mentality of how we want to grow and the people that are with us, and ultimately the actions that we will have to do over the next few years is why I would class it as a startup mentality more than busy, you know, the pure bricks and mortar of being a startup.
Yeah. Okay. And so thinking about your role, like you say, revenue streams. So when I think about a football club, I am not a football fan particularly. My husband tells me that I support Spurs first and Dons second, apparently. but I, you know, I kind of know vaguely what that kind of means. And I've been to a couple of games. But when I think about revenue for football clubs, I think about ticket sales.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the big item, right? Maybe it's not, I don't know, but I would imagine that you've got ticket sales and then food and drink. But what are the revenue streams?
Yeah, so I mean, the fundamentals, certainly in the UK, that, you know, the biggest revenue stream, and I'll talk Premier League and Championship, not necessarily at this level. Obviously, the TV rights, or what we call central funding. So that is the funding that teams get from the league based on the collective sale of those TV broadcasts and things like that. So that's why the Premier League is so rich, you know, earns a ridiculous amount of money on that TV side. So when you look at the bits that you control, you're exactly right. It's ticketing, it's merchandise, hospitality.
Okay.
And then the big one, certainly for any club, it is sponsorship as such. So, you know, it's that alignment for brands, whether it's a community player and they want to be associated with their local football club or a real, you know, big brand that wants to get into in our kind of the football space. And and the higher you get up, the bigger those sponsorship deals are, because ultimately it moves away from being about that small local club to being almost brand visibility. So when you get to the Premier League, you know, the global brands come, necessarily because you're MK Dons in it, but they will know that there's an Asian audience watching mm-hmm. or a US audience watching more than that local piece that, mm-hmm. that we're kind of at now to some extent, really. Mm-hmm. So sponsorship is the ever-growing one, because ultimately there's only a finite amount of tickets you can sell,
yep.
a finite amount of hospital. All of those bits are, you know, relatively determined by your capacities. And then you've got this other piece there. And then, you know, going back to the original question, the bigger you grow, the more you can do internationally as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, supporter clubs, like, you know, soccer, you know, you'll see a Premier League team, they'll go off to tour certain places, whether yep. that's postseason or pre-season. They're big money spinners when you get to that sort of international showpiece mm-hmm. level. So it's all encompassing. There's some real kind of solid ones. So in mm-hmm. terms of your big five bits, and then it's anything else that kind of comes along with it, really.
Mm-hmm. So the big five are?
So obviously tickets, retail, mm-hmm. hospitality, sponsorship, mm-hmm. and then events is the other one that we kind of haven't covered. It's a bit, obviously it's different because there's a few companies involved in mm-hmm. certainly the Stadium MK group, but it's around, yeah, really boring stuff in terms of kind of traditional bits, golf days, NFCs and mm-hmm. things like that. So one thing we've utilized quite a lot this year is that ability to play on the pitch when the season mm-hmm. finishes. So mm-hmm. in essence, there's a 2-week period that it isn't used. So we use it as much as possible. So that's corporate hire, support driven events and things like that. So all the event stuff, mm-hmm. which is again, very small, but still important in the grand mm-hmm. scheme of things when you're talking about the big five, and obviously concerts would mm-hmm. fall into that as well. When you get bigger and better and having mm-hmm. that facility to use over the summer months.
Mm-hmm. And it's quite a fantastic stadium.
It's all right, isn't it? Yeah.
Relative to where the position yeah. is of the club, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful no. when I say that, but the actual facility is pretty good. Again, it's 20 years old, you know, there's been various iterations. It used to be in the hockey club or the hockey stadium, which now no longer exists and now is in this really nice stadium facility. So I think that there's lots of opportunity there, obviously.
Yeah. And that's the opportunity and the challenge, is mm-hmm. that what under the new ownership have come in, and obviously Neil Hart joined kind of be about 9 months ago as such, mm-hmm. really experienced in operating across a multi-use facility and at football clubs in the top level. So real strong expertise. And obviously I've followed him in through the door, and obviously Paul Warren is mm-hmm. head coach. But we're all here for the same project as such, really. Mm-hmm. We believe in it, and we just see so much potential across mm-hmm. the group. But when you look at that club, you know, we want it full, and we want to take that challenge on as such, really, because there's something there to be proud of. Mm-hmm. We just need to make it more full, more often, and get that real buzz on the match day mm-hmm. piece, because we've got everything that, you know, I always say a lot of the time, you look outside the Premier League, we've got something that every team would really like, and mm-hmm. and but what we haven't got is 100 years of history that they mm-hmm. have, and so there's a trade-off with it. But for us, it's seeing what we could build mm-hmm. and then backing ourselves to build it, and ultimately build something that the people of Milton Keynes are proud of, because yeah. that matters just as much as getting people into the stadium on a match day.
And I guess there's a bit of generational piece going on there as well, because you often find families of fans. Like I say, my husband says I support Spurs, his family supports Spurs, and their dads and their granddads and so on and so forth. And I guess that's what is missing in a sense, is a lack of generational, although I guess that's starting to move forward.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'm very, very new into the business as mm-hmm. such, but I've seen it from afar, and I've been here with other clubs mm-hmm. and all the other sorts of side of it. And identifying that as the challenge is probably the key bit. You know, we're here to talk about business, and when you say, right, we can't operate the same as other football clubs, certainly, because we don't have that history. So you mentioned that the Spurs link, that's a great one. Most people of a certain age will move to Milton Keynes either for a job in Milton Keynes mm-hmm. or they will move and commute elsewhere from Milton Keynes mm-hmm. because it's a bit well off, or the kind of the standard reasons for doing so. But that person, more often than not, if they are a football fan, will already have that team. So for you, mm-hmm. it's Spurs, whether you know mm-hmm. it or not,
yep.
it is Spurs and things like that. So in essence, we have to become your second team, or you have to support, or your love of the club has to be different from what you were brought up in and things, mm-hmm. really. And that's, again, part of the challenge. So I always talk hospitality is a great one. You know, how I've got to offer you something that you couldn't get at Spurs, but at a level that you would expect. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the thing. So in essence, if you're, you know, if you can't get a ticket at Spurs because it's sold out and all those pieces from that point of view, how are we front of mind when you think, actually, you know what? I might go to Don's. It might not be Premier League, mm-hmm. in terms of on the field, but off it, mm-hmm. it either is Premier League, a really good minimum standard of service, but also I can bring players. That interaction and that pride, and you care about it a different, mm-hmm. way, really. And that's kind of the challenge that we're undertaking, because ultimately, you alluded to it right at the start, the next generation who were brought up in Milton Keynes, that's the traditional model, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's your, yep. local team, you're 7 years old, you start seeing this, you start getting into it. It's a lot more natural. Mm-hmm. We've just got to identify and produce an offering, and that sounds very clinical, that makes people who are adults already necessarily, mm-hmm. to a certain level, interested in the football club, the stadium, all of the bits that we've got going on, really. Mm-hmm. But again, it's a new challenge. It's a nice challenge.
Yeah. So are you doing a lot of customer modelling or ideal customer modelling at the moment?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially on the business side and the corporate, mm-hmm. side, because that's the bit that we've got a lot of growth, mm-hmm. to kind of look at, really. So it's exactly that. Is what can we offer? You know, looking at, if you take the sport bit, your Spurs, there'll be a proportion of Chelsea, mm-hmm. Arsenal, and then Liverpool, and all of those sort of people. So we're looking at, right, how, going to go back to that modelling piece, how does it look like? Do, mm-hmm. we, you know, you'll realise very soon I've got some wacky ideas and some of them are horrifically terrible, but the odd one's quite good. But do we interact with X, bring some Spurs, you know, legend, or Gary Matt, someone like that, mm-hmm. as a guest speaker on a match day, because... Yeah. If you like Spurs, you will go and see that. And guess, mm-hmm. what? You're hanging around and we hope you fall in love with the club off the back of that. So it's a bit more, it's a modern way of thinking, isn't it, mm-hmm. really? Based on what we're working with on the ground here and what would attract people like that into the club.
Yeah, I think it's thinking about things like, this is where I get into solution mode, yeah. but you know, just thinking about these things.
I'm open to all ideas. So yeah.
You think about things like, what am I paying for when, yeah. I go to a Premier League match? So if I have to pay to go to a Premier League match, I think it's probably, what, 65,
yeah.
minimum?
If you're lucky.
Yeah, if I'm lucky, yeah, yeah, yeah. and I'm already in a supporters club, yeah. right? Well, let's say it's even upwards of that. If I'm taking my children or I'm taking my auntie, my uncle, my granddad, or whoever, you are then thinking, well, I've got to get travel down to London as well. So if you start packaging it, yeah. up like that and you say to people, well, an average family day out, a family of 4 day out to go to the football in London or Manchester, here's what your train ticket's going to cost. Here's what your tickets are going to cost, plus food and your time to get there and back. Actually, what you could do is you can have the whole hospitality package at MK Dons, watch a really good game of football and be back home in 10, 15 minutes, because I don't know whether most people know, but it does only take about 15 minutes to get anywhere in Milton Keynes.
I was about
Keynes.
To say, or less in some cases. Yeah, yeah. No, it's fascinating because you're exactly right. We move away from being, and get really kind of gritty about this, that in essence, you know, probably 20 years ago, you would class a football club or a sport as an event business, isn't, mm-hmm. it? You know, you turn up every 2 weeks and there's a home game and you're competing with other football clubs to do it. But you kind of move away, certainly in the modern world, and we would all class ourselves as an entertainment business or, mm-hmm. a 24/7 business, which is great. And we are, because content and all of that day-to-day bit and sport very easily becomes that, because, mm-hmm. everyone's into it all the time, and especially football, mm-hmm. which is a benefit. But you are then suddenly competing with a cinema, for example, mm-hmm. and all the other bits that come in that kind of space. So, mm-hmm. it isn't just the football. That's a very easy one, because you've gone solution mode and, mm-hmm. and we're on the same sort of path. But how do we bring families away from the cinema, as an example,
yeah.
over the road and give them a good day out and, mm-hmm. and separate? The difference between it is... you kind of already know that the film's going to be all right. And what I mean by that is, you know, you'll have heard very quickly mm-hmm. if that film isn't the best. So mm-hmm. you've made the decision to go. And even if it's not the best film, most people would leave satisfied.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they don't leave satisfied in football, but you're paying for the unknown to some extent, aren't mm-hmm. you? So we control what we control. But at mm-hmm. 3 o'clock on a Saturday, me, my staff, the whole club who isn't on a bit of grass at that time loses complete control of the outcome of that day. So what we have to do is make sure the other bits are even better than a cinemas or the alternatives that mm-hmm. actually it will always factor in, but you limit the factor of what actually happens on the pitch off the base of it, really. But ultimately, you know, I went to the cinema. I've got three girls and we went to the cinema a couple of weeks ago. It was still an £80 day out and yeah. we're cheaper than that.
Yeah.
Everything's a little bit more expensive when you start factoring all the pick and mix and everything else that you're bullied into buying. Or I'm a soft parent, one of the two, I'm not sure.
You still haven't learned the trick of going to Asda or Tesco or wherever first,
yeah,
have you?
True, very true, yeah, yeah.
So we've talked a lot about where you are now and the kind of stuff that you're doing now. What made you get into sport in the first place? Were you excited about getting into sport? Did you play sport at school, or did you just kind of, it was more the job than it was the actual activity?
It was a passion driven thing. So I was a very failed footballer, like the majority, you know, I was good, but I wasn't that good, but I was obsessed with the sport. I was obsessed with sport per se. And I just mm-hmm. happened to be a little bit better at football than anything else. So I was kind of, I immersed myself in it. Geekily, I can kind of tell you every shirt sponsor from like the 90s onwards. And maybe it was a sign that it was coming, but I was so into football as a child. And then I went to university and did a sport management degree. Hadn't given up on the dream, although the dream, you know.
Maybe
my parents were too soft. They should have said I had no chance at that point as such, really. And then when I was kind of at university, and it dawned on me that maybe this life wasn't for me to some extent in terms of the being on the pitch. There was a film called Jerry Maguire. Mm-hmm. So obviously Tom Cruise film and really glamorized what a sports agent was. And I'd never really knew what they were until that film. And then I kind of thought, well, if I don't make it, maybe, you know, I can still be involved in the world of sport from a mm-hmm. business point of view, really. So I, again, did all my dissertations on it and kind of had one eye on it. Went to do a master's afterwards. And I remember I was lucky enough to, you know, when you write to everyone and, you know, the odd person replies for your mm-hmm. questionnaire and that sort of process. And I met a lovely guy called John Holmes. So John Holmes, and I think he still is, was Gary Lineker's agent. He was one of the first agents to ever, but at the time his company looked after, I think, David Beckham, Michael Owen, all of these mm-hmm. people. And I went to see him and kind of, you know, in his gambit to me was, it's a great life, but you've got to get in the door somehow to be of value. Very transactional piece, yeah. but I kind of get what he was saying. So I kind of made it my kind of duty to try and get into a football club mm-hmm. just to see either how it operated, but give me that kind of USP that when I come back, it's like, oh yeah, no, I know how a football club works. And I know mm-hmm. where we can get all these players and things like that. So I was so I went to Coventry University. So mm-hmm. I had a job, and I tell this story because the thing with sport is there's no, well, certainly football clubs in the business of sport, there isn't almost a straight line into it. So it's not like mm-hmm. a doctor where you have to do X, Y, and Z and you kind of go that way. And I worked in a bar and I befriended the people who were building what was now the CBS Arena, and they'd come in every Thursday night to my bar and I badgered them like, hey, they will tell you this as well, to give me like a bit of experience and because the stadium wasn't built, it was around like pre-sales and mm-hmm. things like that. So I badgered them, and then when they finished the stadium, the people that built it ended up working for the football club, so they knew me. And I badgered them, but they knew kind of where I wanted to go as such. So offered me a job there looking after, well, they wanted to be customer service manager. Mm-hmm. So they had a pile of letters that people had wrote in and never been responded to. And it was great. And I kind of convinced them to bring in a bit of marketing on that. So technically it was custom service and marketing manager, because mm-hmm. that was my passion. And mm-hmm. I knew from my, you know, my modules at university, that was the bit. But I didn't really know what was going.
You were spotting opportunities. Yeah, that was exactly kind of where like you started that. Yeah, doing that.
And then I went in, and then I still had, you know, Tom Cruise in the back of my head and things like that. And very quickly knew, I'm talking a couple of weeks, that I loved that side of the business more than kind of the other side, really. So from that point, I kind of made it a mission to get as far as I kind of can up the tree. So that's how I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
Perseverance, badgering, and if you were being clinical again, mm-hmm. you know, making myself stand out for when that opportunity arose. And then exactly what you've just said there, that when I was in or saw the gaps that I thought I could help with,
mm-hmm.
it got me in that way, really. And the bit that kind of where I get to today is, you fast forward, I mean, it is about 20 years now. That's how old I am. And I've been kind of doing this job. I found this love of almost building commercial departments for mm-hmm. sports teams. So spotting where the new revenue is, sponsor all of those pieces. And then as a, you know, you go from a talented performer, for want of a bit, to a manager, to a leader, and all the bits mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll talk about, but knowing how to build it and then how what it takes to deliver it, working with, you know, what resources that you have to kind mm-hmm. of get there, really. So it's quite prescriptive at that mm-hmm. point. And but it all started from that guy that genuinely, on a Monday morning, whether we won or lost, I would get a phone call from a gentleman who wasn't happy with the customer service in the kiosks. And I would get a complaint about, and this sounds, it's pretty PG, but the bits that you don't see, like the complaints that there's bird muck on your seat when you've arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, you definitely won't see this, but it does happen still. You would employ falcons that kill the pigeons, don't they?
Yeah.
So you move pretty quickly from bird muck to bird guts on your seat and all of that sort of stuff like that. But it would happen because ultimately, yeah, you do your checks on a Friday and something happens overnight. So, mm-hmm. but what a place to be grounded to bring mm-hmm. it all the way through. And it, you just, you get in the door, you see your opportunities, you build on this, but you have to love it at the same mm-hmm. time. And for me, it was that commercial side of the business mm-hmm. that became my passion and ultimately something I think I'm relatively good at. Depends who you talk to.
I think a lot of what you've been talking about there is grit and determination.
Yeah.
People think, especially now, you see a lot of people that think something happens overnight. And actually, I can be a chief commercial officer in the first 5 years of my career. You might be able to, absolutely. But actually, some of that experience needs to be lived experience of understanding, well, we've actually got to get the bird poo off the seats before people sit in them. Because if you then go into a more senior position and you haven't had some of that lived experience, you can't understand what people are actually experiencing in that environment, can you?
No, and I was naive with that. I was that person when I, you know, I'd come in, oh, you know, what do you mean I haven't done that? But I can learn it in 3 weeks. It'll be fine because I'm a quick learner. I'm a hard worker. And then, you know, when I became like 30 and the decisions you make come naturally and you become, it's very smooth. And you're like, that's what experience is. It's not that I don't know how to stop. I know we keep going back to the berm up bit. It's mm-hmm. the fact that I know if we do X, Y, and Z, we'll never have this problem again. And mm-hmm. You have to go through. It's quite painful, isn't it, really, yep. In some extents, to give you that real, that learned experience mm-hmm. is a lot different from just knowing your product inside out, for want of a better word.
Mm-hmm. And do you think there were people that you specifically looked up to that kind of helped you realise that maybe you didn't know what you thought you knew at certain points?
I still don't sometimes. Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm laughing because I know, you know, you get older and you realise how annoying you must have been as a child and things like that. And I'm a why person. And mm-hmm. my wife hates, she's like, "What? Why are you asking questions all the time?" In fact, she bans me asking questions. But it's like, I just need to know how things work and function and stuff, really. So certainly my Coventry City days, and to some extent, Huddersfield Town in the early clubs. I was that guy. And mm-hmm. It's like, you need to, and you know, and you look back and very fondly, I'm pretty sure some of them would like to have been my mentor or would claim that they have. And those mm-hmm. But I do know inquisitive is probably, rather than annoying, I'd lean on that. But you have to, I just want to know how stuff functions to be mm-hmm. able to deal with it. If it doesn't function, I suppose it is the weird way. But yeah, I had a select group of kind of three or four people. I could pick the phone up and mm-hmm. and go that way. And kind of how it evolves, because again, I'm sure this will come up for you, that, you know, when you're early 20s at the very start, everyone's got loads of advice for you because you're not a threat, you're ineffective and you're just a bit green, aren't you, really? And then you move up from that bit to being a manager. And, you know, sport is, you know, I think this is my sixth football club and, you know, it's Neil's sixth. And it's quite, it's common for people to, you know, people very rarely would do a 20, 30 year career, mm-hmm. like any job really, I suppose, from that point of view. So there comes a point as you grow up and kind of move up the chain, for want of a better word, that actually, you know, those people, you are suddenly in the same conversation as some of these people for different points in your career, really. So your mentorship changes from being that person that will always pick the phone up and mm-hmm. getting from their advice, but then you have to take your you have to get your experience and advice from elsewhere, really. And that's just the way of the world. So going back to your point, what starts as a mentor then becomes almost a, you know, I'll phone someone at another football club. It becomes a much more kind of lateral relationship for where you get that guidance mm-hmm. for your next step, really, mm-hmm. because, it gets a little bit lonely and the decisions get a little bit harder, but you've got to get your counsel right, haven't you, mm-hmm. really? So that's how it evolves.
I think that's, we talked about this off air about heavy is the head that wears the crown, because when the buck does stop with you, there are serious decisions to be made. And in the kind of environment that you're in, it's not 9 to 5 Monday to Friday.
I wish it was. Yeah. Well, my wife wishes it was. Yeah, that's for sure.
So I can imagine that's been quite challenging over time, because people who do, you know, friends, family who do work in, let's say, a normal working pattern of Monday to Friday or during the week, they don't necessarily understand why you need to leave or why you can't attend dinners or barbecues or events.
Yeah, it's very early on in my career, you realise it's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And you either embrace it or it's just not for you. I suppose anything that is entertainment, the arts, all of those bits are, because you've got to be, you're emotionally attached to everything, mm-hmm. aren't you, from that point of view. So, yeah, it's funny that she'll hate me for saying this, but my wife and kids, they don't know what I do. And I'm all right with that, because I get home on a Saturday after a game mm-hmm. and they're not asking me about the stuff that's really annoyed me, and mm-hmm. I can just have that 3 or 5 just to switch off from that mm-hmm. point of view. So you find that balance, because there's no avoiding that mm-hmm. it is all consuming. What that does come is that you do need that acknowledgement that you can't go to what normal people, that's the whole thing. No one works a normal job anyway, do they anymore? But what would be a traditional kind of, mm-hmm. you know, a wedding and all of those sort of bits that you have to miss at certain points. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's hard for the players, to be mm-hmm. honest, because they, you know, they have to move weddings and all of mm-hmm. those sort of bits like that. But that comes with being in this industry, really. Mm-hmm. And she can be understanding, as is my family.
How do you work the balance? Because the more senior you get, people think, I climb the ladder, it's going to get better for me. I'm going to get paid more money. It's going to make my life easier. It's going to be fantastic because I will be the chief commercial officer of the MK Dons. But in reality, trying to balance all of those things, so balancing your work life, trying to work out what the family's doing, trying to work out, yeah, we've got money, but great, now I need to book a holiday, but actually I can't book a holiday between this time and this time because this is where the season is. Then I've got pre-season and post-season, and trying to work that. Do you think you are better now at balancing that?
Yeah.
And would your wife say something different?
No, she'd definitely say something different. It's a really good question, and I haven't got it right. Mm-hmm. I've never got it right. Any club, because I'm an all-in per, you'll learn mm-hmm. that. You know, I'm incredibly passionate and I'm all in because I just want to fix it, get there, and I'm impatient. I'm all of the bits that kind of go against me in this sort of, when you're at home and you need to switch off and, mm-hmm. and all of those sort of pieces. The biggest balance I can find is things like when you go on holiday, just negotiating an hour just to check your emails and things like mm-hmm. that. And that's the best. I'm lucky because they're all girls. So there is a moment where I'm ready for mm-hmm. the evening and they're mm-hmm. not ready. So it's kind of negotiating those sort of periods. But mm-hmm. it's impossible to switch up. But I also think, certainly since COVID, I think life's gotten a bit like that. So mm-hmm. in essence, you know, I will deal with 20, 30 kind of commercial partners, so club mm-hmm. and those. But if they text me or phone me, it's normally in the evening because they're doing exactly the same as what I'm doing, really, mm-hmm. to some extent. So, yeah, it gets to the weekend. I'll try and put the laptop down, finish on the Friday, maybe give myself a Saturday in the off season. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday is an mm-hmm. amalgamation of enjoying a bit of time with the kids and then mm-hmm. prep for the next week, really. So I certainly have not got, whatever that balance is you talk about, it isn't me and I haven't got there as such, really.
But I think it depends on the kind of person you are and what you want from your life and how that works, because actually that might work for you and your family, and actually that is your balance.
Yeah.
And some people think, well, balance means you have to do 50-50, but actually sometimes for people 80-20 is the rule, and actually that works much better for those people because that's how their brain works, that's how they are as individuals. Actually, I like working, it's great, you know, I want to spend that time and do, you know, do whatever I need to do, whether it's emails, calls, whatever.
And I think that's it. I think, I, you know, no matter what challenge I've got or whatever club it's at, I love the challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think coming from a competitive sport environment, I don't know if it leads to, I'm just naturally driven by it. So I am all on. So it's not like, it's horribly cliched about the whole work and you'll never have to work day if you love it and all that stuff. But it's like, I'm in mm-hmm. like that. So it do get my weird enjoyment from the challenge. Mm-hmm. You never end the challenge though, do you? Because as soon as you move up, it becomes something else, really, is and that's the hard bit with it. What I would, going back to when you were talking about the money and things like that, something that twigged with me probably 5 years ago and how I deliver it to my family and things is actually, you know, you might be getting good money, great, whatever mm-hmm. that money is, but you're not getting that money just for what you've done. Mm-hmm. You're getting it for what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. So it's like a project fee if you think about it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at a project, you go, well, I need to give X, Y, and Z to this project. It's what I'm going to do with it. And sometimes that helps that conversation because mm-hmm. it allows us to do nice things, mm-hmm. but there is a price to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And this is the price, isn't it?
And again, I think that's something that I find interesting when I talk to younger people who are perhaps, I don't know, kind of tweens, if you like, so that 12, 13, 14 kind of age. And we ask them, you know, I always ask them, you know, kind of, you thought about, you know, what you're going to do in the future. Now, listening to you, talked about going to university and having a master's. And I think for some people, that's fantastic. For other people, so I never went to university. And for me, that wouldn't have worked because I'm not particularly academic and can't sit down and do something. But when I talk to these kids, university isn't even on their radar because what they think they're going to do is they're going to get rich quick on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, whatever the latest thing is. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay. What are you going to do? Well, I don't know. I haven't quite thought that through yet. But I do think there is a difference now in comparison to perhaps when you left university when you left university and watched Jerry Maguire and thought, I'll become a sports agent.
I'd have earned more money as Jerry Maguire, if it had one client. So it wasn't all bad, yeah.
But do you think that it would be easier or do you think it would be harder for somebody to get into your kind of career now?
I don't think the academic thing was ever really important. in football, certainly in football, because there's so because there's so many ways in terms of my side of the business. Now, if you want to be a physio, that's a completely different. If you want to be a player, it's incredibly different. And I have this, you're right in what you say, because I have this conversation with my eldest quite a bit, is if you find what you're passionate about, and you're really passionate about it, there's a living to be had, but you've got to know what that living looks like. So, so it's almost a two-pronged attach, isn't it? Because, you know, as a kid, you just want to earn money. Well, that's great. But if you're dreading going into work on a Monday, the money only goes so far from that point of view. So you've got to have that passion. And then you've got to know, I wouldn't say a plan necessarily, because that's very kind of rigid, isn't it, as such? But ultimately, you could get somewhere. So if you don't know what you want to be, do something generic at Cole, whatever that is, or just find something that you really like. And then my role as either a parent and a manager and those is to show you, right, this is how far you could go, but this is what you've got to do to go to that level, really. And I think going back to kind of some of the conversations that we've had, and my kind of first mentor, the guy at Coventry City, was saying, you've just got to know your boat's heading in the right direction. My job is to show you that it's the right direction. Because if you're not careful, you'll veer off and decisions you make or clubs or wherever you go to might end up harming you when on the surface you think it's the right thing to do, really. And that's the challenge I have with my children or certainly those people that I speak to, is going, what are you really passionate about? And where could it get you, but keep you on that path? Because ultimately, yeah, you want to be a social media, you want to be a YouTuber. They work hard. And that's the bit that you don't see when you're 12, 13, 14, or even younger to some extent. Yeah, it's a challenge for them. But in terms of, I certainly think there's more opportunities than there's ever been before if you know roughly where you want to go.
Yeah. And I think that's correct. I think there is a lot of scope for people to do all sorts of things these days. And certainly when I was thinking about it the other day, I look across my age range of friends and family, and probably 2/3 of them have had some sort of side hustle, own business, you know, or founders, you know, whatever. And I think that's really quite interesting, because people my parents' age, so kind of 60s, 70s, there was a lot less entrepreneurialism and a lot more, actually, I'm going to work in the same job for 30 years. And you said about that before, and perhaps that's not, you know, kind of the industry you've gone in. You might work in the industry for that amount of time, but not necessarily for the same kind of people for that amount of time.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think people are aware of what they can do as well, aren't they, off the back of it. It's never been, look at all the website companies. It costs a couple hundred quid to do your own website, whereas, you know, obviously the internet wasn't invented and things like that, but you would never have, you know, you'd be looking at thousands, you know, life's become cheaper in some regards or easier to start things up.
Yeah.
You know, I remember conversations, you talk to someone in fashion and, you know, they'd have had to have made 500 of the same t-shirt if they'd have gone to do it. You can do, well, you don't even need minimums anymore, do you really? So if you're really into something, you can get up there. I think it's probably that experience and the skill set that comes down the line, but we'll, you know, determine if you're successful in certainly your side hustle as such. But I'm all for it. I think it's just a great place to be in because you can fail with a few hundred quid. Yeah. What you can't do is, like you say, give up your job, sell your house. There's a lot more pressure on that on that bit, which would have happened, you know, 80s, 90s when you're going through that process, wouldn't it?
So what do you think you would say your biggest challenge has been? Because the podcast is What's Your Problem? So it's good to talk to people about what they've had as a challenge perhaps in their professional career.
Yeah, I think one I'm continually working on is it's around people management, but pace.
Okay.
So I'm incredibly impatient. I want everything done tomorrow, but I want to start 50 things today and do that. So it's more a refinement on my own challenge and going, right, break it down, what's achievable, where are we at, and just having kind of just been able to take myself out and look down a little bit, really, mm-hmm. because there's a human cost to some of these things. And what I mean by that is, it's great that I want to do them, but if everyone else isn't on my wavelength, guess what? They've got other things to do. So there's almost that goes back to your solution. If your solution mm-hmm. is X and it's going to do that, I've always been a case, we'll find a way of making it work and mm-hmm. we'll do it. And, you know, I'll muck in and all of those sort of bits like that. But it's harder to do that based on either the size of the business mm-hmm. now versus where you yeah. want to get to it. But also what motivates people. Certainly, you know, being open, kind of a younger person at 22 isn't what motivates me at 44 mm-hmm. from the back end of that. So there's a lot of, I have to almost, it's like mini projects again, isn't it? So I want it to be here. If it's not here by X, when can it be by X? Mm-hmm. If we meet in the middle, what does this look like? What support can you get? So it's a far more kind of operational piece just for what something that would have been a let's just crack on and do it back in the day and just getting it done mm-hmm. done by then, really. So
what made you realize
my wife no it's a really good question that I think what where you get to, and I think I covered this a little bit, is you become really good at something and then you step up. So you become mm-hmm. a manager and mm-hmm. that's great. And then you spend less time doing what you're really good at. So if you're really good at sales or marketing, in my case, you become a manager and then you're like, I haven't got time to do all of the marketing and manage 3 people. And then you kind of find a way of that management of mm-hmm. people, going back to that piece. So you're always aware of it. And then you move up into what you'd call obviously a leadership position. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of on your own to some extent because mm-hmm.
You're no longer in the trenches,
are
you?
You're no longer in the trenches, but you are in the trenches at the same time. And it's finding that blend between the mm-hmm. three. So then you start looking at actually, it's more than managing, isn't it, really? Then you, mm-hmm. you go to the culture behind what motivates and all mm-hmm. of those pieces. And then, you know, being open, you start reading books, you start speaking to people, you start listening to podcasts and mm-hmm. all of those bits, because actually your support network has changed. So you can't think, oh, what happened with this and things like that. Then you start looking at almost the science behind people, really. Mm-hmm. And that, again, kind of fascinated me quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it was at that moment of time when you start going, right, if I nail this bit, everybody rises mm-hmm. and you go through that sort of process. So it wasn't one thing. There are examples, again, I keep referring to my wife, and was mm-hmm. about where I know I've been impatient mm-hmm. and almost coming out the back and things like that. And my 10-year-old, she's kind of, we always say she was born angry because she dictates. I've got 3 girls, so the third child always dictates it. Mm-hmm. But you know, she's 10 now and she will question everything like that. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you've got that lived example of going, oh yeah, that, you know, you can have adult conversations and then my wife's going, well, this is why you do this. And mm-hmm. now you see why you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, got you. And so there's little bits that kind of keep you in check along the way. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to that experience and just recognizing and putting yourselves in groups of people who have done it mm-hmm. and gone, right, this is how you do it and things like that. And it's the same, I know, kind of we're expanding on the question to some extent, but the one that fascinated me is that when I thought I would get here, I'd have the answers to everything. Mm-hmm. I'd go, right, we need to make a decision. Right, here's all the information. And you realize you're always in the gray a little bit, aren't you? The yeah. decisions are bigger, mm-hmm. but you've never got all the information to be 100% right. You need to get the information to a point where you mm-hmm. you know yourself to know the risks, rewards and those points, which, you know, anyone who started a business, if you've got 80% of the information to make a really evidence-based decision, mm-hmm. you're doing phenomenally well, is what mm-hmm. I'd say.
And sometimes you don't, and you just make decisions and sometimes they work,
yeah,
and sometimes they don't,
and then it leads to the evidence, doesn't it, really? So yeah, and that's the challenge. It's not a new chase, it's a challenge mm-hmm. I will continually have to deal with mm-hmm. Based on being a leader rather mm-hmm. than the other bits that mm-hmm. I've kind of been through, really.
So what do you think would be, well, I don't know whether you've got a top piece of advice or maybe a couple of things that you might say to somebody who wanted to get into a career in football, not football management, but I guess adjacent to football teams or sports teams, maybe whether it's rugby, whether it's football, whatever it might be. What do you think it's different now to, you know, we talked a little bit about education. Do you need a degree? Do you need a particular kind of experience? What do you think someone needs to get into that kind of environment these days?
I always think you've got to stand out. And I think that's it, because, you know, I am acutely aware that whilst there, you know, there's 92 of my positions or maybe even less as such, really, that there's a really finite amount, but everybody would like to do it. Mm-hmm. The problem of anything like that, whether you're, again, in the arts and the other bits, is then how you stand out, isn't it, really? And how you make yourself different to everybody else. People employ people, don't they? Mm-hmm. And you normally look at your same traits and that bit. So how can you stand out, is get yourself known and all of those sort of. But ultimately, the two bits I always tell kind of my staff for the same conversation around how they progress is you've got to work hard. Mm-hmm. You've got to put the hours in and be able to work hard, because you can control that. Mm-hmm. I can lose to you in a job interview. You could be better, but I know you will never outwork me. Mm-hmm. Not you personally. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll take it on.
And things like that. So that matters when people are looking at people. And then the other bit that I always hammer home to my team and would be the same if you're looking to get into it, is do what you say you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Always deliver. Because the moment you don't deliver is the moment that people walk away from football clubs or your business and things like that. So anything that you can do to elevate yourself at that entry level piece will always put you in a good stead to some extent. And then the other bit is my downfall, and the other bit is, you know, be inquisitive. There's nothing wrong with being inquisitive. So if you're reading that something hasn't worked or in the news, because the beauty of sport is football. Mm-hmm. There's always examples of stuff that hasn't worked as well as stuff that has worked. Ask yourself why it hasn't worked and what you would have done better, because these are life situations you will put yourself in very quickly when you get into the sport as such.
Mm-hmm. And I always think that's quite interesting. I'm always curious about why somebody will do something in a particular way, especially if you go out for dinner, for example, and you kind of have certain brand standards. Or perhaps I went for dinner recently and they gave us a menu and I was with my uncles, and the typeset was so small that everyone had to borrow my glasses to read the typeset because they couldn't see it. And I thought, that's a really curious thing to do in the restaurant trade, is to make your menu really hard to read. Why would you do that? Like, what kind of led to that? And actually, it probably wasn't even a thought process. No. It was just a typeset that was already in the program.
I think we have this presumption that everything's an intentional action, or maybe I have a presumption that everything's an intentional action. I'll give you a live sporting example. My last club, Leicester Tigers, the head coach there was a guy called Steve Borthwick, who is now the England head coach. Mm-hmm. And he was an unbelievable speaker. Mm-hmm. But he talked like that. And he found this perfect pitch level between being quiet, but your ears having to be at it. So every word he said, you hung off and things. And I remember pulling him aside and said, "Steve, that's brilliant." He said, what do you mean, Mark? Said, the way you talk, said, like, how have you got to that point? And he said, it's just the way I talk. And I'm like, you're blessed with a gift. But I'd gone through this process of convincing myself he'd gone to, you know, acting and RADA class, all of those sort of bits like that, based on that bit. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're inquisitive and question everything in the right way, again, it puts you in it, you know, ahead of everybody else, and you'll be in a good place regardless of what you choose to do. Because a textbook would say you're a thorough thinker off the back of it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. A thorough thinker. That's a great way.
Keep that one.
Yeah, I like that. That's a brilliant way to end today's session. Thank you, Mark. You can listen to the podcast on Spotify, or you can watch it on YouTube. Links will be in underneath.